This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week number 676, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you.
I heard them say that the beach shall rain on Earth. Fantastical myriads of save you call it birth. I've seen the rapture in a star of baby's eyes. In co-ape Peter to the Lord of the Flies. So what does it mean when your mind starts to stray? The ride has got thick images.
Hello, welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 676. I am Josh Flanagan. I'm here with my co-host, Connor Kilpatrick.
Hey, Josh.
Connor lucked out today because there's no ad in here that we have to get right. It's just us. To fill all the
just
time.
Two jamokes. Just doing it.
Just a couple of jamokes.
For the love.
We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, other books, some books. There's books to be talked about. We talk about the patron book pick, which is a book, and we might have time for listener mail. Those generally concern books. And when I say books, I mean comics, which are books. It'll be fun, like the comic in comic book. Here's your spoiler warning. We will review said books. And there will be spoilers in same. So, you had the pick of the week. Would you please care to explain yourself?
Sure. If no one should be surprised. The pick of the week is Detective Comics 1000. Looking at the cover, I keep wanting to call it Detective Comics 96 because there's a giant 96 where the number of the episode, the issue usually is. This is the, obviously, landmark issue of Detective Comics, the second DC title to hit 1000. And it was awesome. It was what I was hoping it would be. It was similar to the Action Comics 1000 in that it was mostly evergreen stories by top-level creators. And then the very last story was one that was tied into whatever is happening in the book. And much like Action Comics, that was the least good story, which is fine. I enjoy the evergreen stories much more. So there was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 evergreen stories, and I'm struggling to find one I didn't like. I love them. I liked or loved all of them. I think when I got to the Tom King story, which I guess is the second to last one, I was like, this is the pick. I mean, mm-hmm. This is it. So the one before that was The Precedent by James Tynion. We'll go through real quick, but I'm curious what you thought of it, because obviously this is like, I'm like a mark for this issue.
Yeah.
But when you had like Scott Snyder and Kevin Smith and Paul Dini and Warren Ellis and Denny O'Neill and Christopher Priest and Bendis and Jeff Johns and Tinney and Tom King, I mean, this is a pretty top flight writing staff on the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
What did you think?
It was fine. No, here's what I was thinking as I was reading it. Mm-hmm. And I can say lots of nice things about it. I think generally the stories were all pretty good. There wasn't a lot of this is like their anthology things that they do like once a quarter. They do it around a holiday or something like that. This is the format they use. And usually, there's two or three good stories and then a handful of clunkers, and that's kind of how it is. And I think that the overall quality here was better than usual. I think that... So there were definitely things that I liked. I think, what's the bit? The Dustin Nguyen pencils, I thought, were a highlight for me. I really liked them. I didn't love Paul Dini's story. I was really impressed by Greg Capullo's pencils mm-hmm. in the beginning part, because I was reading, like, who is this?
Well, the very first page of the Snyder Capullo story didn't look like Capullo.
Yeah, and it didn't after that.
I thought it quickly became more Capullo-like, but the very first page, I was like, that's Capullo? Yeah, the face looked off.
But even after that, like, it looks like, it's almost like there's some Mignola in there, and just a different, like, everybody had kind of a different bearing, like the body types. He was doing a different type of thing, which I liked. Like, I was in the middle of a Kevin Smith story, and I was like, why is he talking like... There was a couple of times where the words were just weird. It was a good story. You know, Jim Lee. Like, the thing is, it's kind of, to me... My overall thought when I got done with it is that... And this is absolutely subjective. This is the 1,000th issue. This has only happened one other time before in all of comic books. It feels like everybody who's been reading for a significant amount of time has been waiting for this to happen. I remember being a kid thinking, wow, when the 1,000th issue comes out, that's crazy. And I wish that there was more to it. I think I wish the same thing with Action Comics,
You don't like anthologies.
I don't, but also I don't like...
You also don't like anniversary issues.
I don't like it. It's their tried and true formula. I think it would have been really cool if I was in charge, you know, to be like, let's really do something that's really special, that's never been done. Let's change it up in some way. Maybe that means that they work on it forever in advance, you know, like do something really special and memorable. And I guess it's possible that will fall on its face, you know, which is with any story, but like it was the same. It was like, oh, yep, there's Jim Lee drawn a few pages with these people. It looks like this. And Paul Dini's back for this issue. And here's, you know, it's just, it was the same thing. And it wasn't bad, but it was like, I just feel like everything is so stagnant and repetitive right now. This is not the most interesting thing that, you know, it's just the thing they do. And it's fine, but it's trotting out the hits. And
this is my favorite type of comic they could ever do. Like my favorite of all time comics, probably the anniversary issues are my favorite ones.
I get that. And I think that speaks very much to sort of the type of reader that someone is and how they react to this. Whereas I do something for a while and I'm like, ah, that's enough. You do something and you go, oh, that's what I want. That's great. You know, and that shifts in varying degrees. But
I also think these kind of stories, when you can step away from the quote unquote main continuity, you can have a little fun with it.
Yes.
These are stories. Most of these kind of short stories are not going to happen in the regular book. And you can also get to the sort of core of the characters a bit easier when you can just tell an evergreen story about them, as opposed to having to keep the continuity going.
And I agree with you. And those are all the things that I like about it. I think that's absolutely the case, but you can do that on the 950 and 1050 and 800 and 900 or whatever, but like 1,000, like that's comic book history. That's a really big deal. Maybe stretch a little more than they did. That's kind of what I came away with it with.
And I'm curious what you would have wanted them to do, but that's probably discussion.
I don't know. I mean, that's not. Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, I don't necessarily have an answer for that, but like, bring in a massive name that's been drawn by, you know, like something really special, like come out of nowhere with, you know, 100 pages of Frank Quitely art, or just something to blow you away, or at least make the effort to feel like that. And this doesn't feel like that. This feels like, shit, we have to put this out in 3 months. All right, let's call these guys. They'll all want to do it. And they did. And Denny O'Neill is there, and that's fun. And Neil Adams. But we have seen it. Like, we've done this. It's the same. Oh, it's Pete Tomasi. Like, who writes on the book? I know. It's James Tynion. Like, I'm sorry, but he doesn't belong in this gang right now. I don't care.
Although he wrote the best story, so.
True. No, I know that. But, like, it's like I saw it, and I was like, it's not exciting. It's the same old, same old, same old, whether they're tied to continuity or not. And they're good short stories. I like reading these short stories. I have no problem with any of them from a craft point or anything like that.
I think what they're doing is, in addition to honoring the character, they're honoring the people that have, made big, not all of them, but many of them made big contributions to the characters and or are big names in the industry.
I don't think you're wrong. I think you're right about that. But I,
so it allows them all to sort of have a little piece of this milestone.
Yeah, and that is very fair, absolutely fair. I just was like, I started and I thought, I know what this is going to be, and it was that thing. And sometimes I want to be surprised, but there's also a probably larger element of people reading comics who want that. Mm-hmm. That familiarity, and I can't blame them for that. And if I'm, you know, so I'm saying if I'm a creative person or I'm an editor, that's what I'm talking about is what I would kind of like to happen. But if I'm a businessman, if I'm the, you know, the person who's got to be like, yeah, do that. That's a better deal. It's going to make more people happy. And this is all very subjective stuff, I think. Mm-hmm. But that was what I was thinking. It's a big deal. Make it a big deal. And didn't feel like that. Lots to enjoy in it regardless.
So it opened with a Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo story, The Longest Case, in which Batman has been following these clues for years and years and years, and ends up that there are clues left by a detective club that features like The Question and Hawkman and Elongated Man.
With that one, like, I liked it and I had fun, but like at the end when Batman kept going, I felt a little like that. And then I also thought at the end, I was like, did you really just set up another centuries old group of fucking things that are happening in the background again? And maybe that propelled me through the rest of it. Cause I was like, really? It's a good story. It totally is. But it's been done as many times as JMS walking off a book without finishing it.
You're most likely never going to ever hear about this group again. It's just a fun little story. The second story, which I really liked a lot too, was the Kevin Smith story drawn by Jim Lee, which was Batman going to great lengths to get the gun that killed his parents, and then he melted it down to create the chest plate that protects him.
That's a really good example of the kind of story that you would never see in a regular book, though.
Yeah, I really like this one a lot. I really like the Paul Dini story, The Legend of Newt Brody, which was – so one thing I really liked was in the Kevin Smith story, they made like an offhand mention of a Netflix-type series, a Gotham crime show. Mm-hmm. And then in the very next story is like an episode of that show written by Paul Dini, The Legend of Newt Brody. And I really liked it. It was this inept, you know, hired goon who fucks up everybody's crimes, and turns out it's been one of the Bat family in disguise the whole time. And I liked that. That was fun.
Yeah.
The Warren Ellis story was interesting, drawn by Becky Cloonan.
Beautiful.
It looked really good. It might have been my least favorite story, but there were interesting elements to it.
I think it's fair.
Overall, I thought, okay, this is all right, but...
Look at me, I'm already dead. Look at me, I'm trapped in this place, and all I do is haunt the living. I mean, it's grim.
It was pretty grim.
Yeah.
But this kind of book.
I don't know if it was...
And the next story, too, was...
I was going to say, I don't know if it's as grim as Denny O'Neill's take on all this.
Right, Denny O'Neill, Steve Epting. That's what was interesting about them back-to-back, was Batman was not shown in a good light in really either one of them, which was a really interesting choice to make. Denny O'Neill, Steve Epting story of an elderly... Leslie Tompkins, meets up with Batman on the anniversary of his parents' death at the Crime Alley spot, which is something they used to always do in comics and never deal with anymore. Uh-huh. And some guys try to mug them, and Batman open hand slaps them, which was my favorite thing. While being kind of a dick to them, and she basically says, "You are the problem here."
Leslie Tompkins mad as hell, and she's not going to take it anymore.
Yeah, she feels sorry for Batman. That was a rough end. Then we had Christopher Priest, Neil Adams. I mean, there's a lot of interesting combos here. This was an interesting creator combo. And I actually really liked this one. I thought this was also good. Neil Adams, too.
Pretty good, yes. I agree.
This was a Ra's al Ghul story. And then Bendis and Maleev. His story here takes place in the future when Bruce is old and in a wheelchair and the Penguin finds him and says, "Hey, I've known who you are for a while, and I could have done something about it, but I decided if I took away your secret identity, you'd be even worse."
You know, what's interesting is that I think that at the end of that story, they left out a word balloon, and it was him saying, "Strike me down, and I will become more powerful than you can possibly imagine." I actually the whole time I was like, "That's Obi-Wan Kenobi," but I loved the art. There's a bit I want to say the third or fourth page that's the second page after the double page spread. So 55 new digital reader. Upper right corner is frowning penguin, and then when he figures something out, it's the smiling penguin. And I was like, that is beautiful cartooning. Really, really great Alex Maleev art.
It was. I mean, even if this is not my favorite kind of penguin design.
No, but
basically Tim Burton penguin, but
it works though.
It worked for the story. Yeah. And the facial expressions were terrific.
Yeah.
I like this a lot. I mean, I know Bendis is doing Batman for the Walmart books. I haven't obviously read those, but obviously, you know, people want to see him doing Batman.
I don't know that that's obvious.
Really interesting pairing was the Geoff Johns, Kelly Jones story. And I'm not a Kelly Jones fan, never been a Kelly Jones fan, but it was an interesting pairing. I would never have thought they would put those two people together.
I agree with your statement there. And I was never a fan either, but I think I'm at the point now where I can appreciate it. You know what I mean?
Oh, for sure. There's artistry here for just not my favorite style.
Right. Yeah. But when I was a kid, I was like, that's ugly. Why would anyone like this? Which I thought the same thing about Sienkiewicz, by the way. And now I'm like, oh, I get it. Like, again, but this isn't my favorite, whereas Sienkiewicz would be. I didn't love this story.
This was a dream. Well, not a dream. Sort of like Batman making a wish on his birthday. Yeah. And the whole story was a wish for in the future when, you know, they basically eradicate crime. And it was fine. It was okay.
Yeah. I wanted it to be better.
And then we start the home stretch, which was James Tinney in the fourth and Alvaro Martinez Bueno doing a story about Dick Grayson becoming Robin. And I was really just happy to see, again, because these are evergreen classic stories, that it wasn't the New 52 version. It was the classic Circus Trunks Robin. And I obviously loved every page of this book. And I thought the art was really nice. It had a very sort of Alan Davis-esque feel to it, and sort of a little bit of Marcos Martín in it. Really, really nice work. I don't know why I haven't seen his name before in other books. But I love that story. And then the Tom King story obviously took it home for me, which was all of the Bat Kids hanging out on a rooftop bickering or talking. And I could have this as a monthly book, and it would be my favorite monthly book.
You are a mark.
Yeah. I mean, I would read this for 100 pages.
Yeah.
They were all together because Batman wanted to take a family photo, which was
funny. Yeah. I just, like, in all these, I'm just like, who are all these people? Like, I just, make Damian go away. Make Duke go away.
Listen, I'm with you on that.
Let's keep Jason Todd tightly under wraps. Cassandra Cain's fine. I like her a lot. This is too cluttered. And then I was like, he's not going to take a picture.
Yeah.
Which, if you're going to do it anywhere, you do that story here. It's silly, and I can respect that part of it. Hey, Ace the Bat Hound's there. That's nice.
Yeah, he was barking through the whole thing. It was interesting, though, on the cover of the book, you had Batman, Nightwing, and Robin, and you had no Batgirl, and you had no Tim Drake. Once again, marginalized from the cover issue. But I mean, he's got a big family. He could definitely lose some of them. A Catwoman, you know, whatever. Yep. I wouldn't necessarily have her in this particular grouping. You know, are they married? Are they not married? It doesn't really matter. But if they're married, then sure. But if they're not married, then she really shouldn't probably be here.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really matter. It was all amazing. And there was Michael Janin, Jason Fabok, and Amanda Connor pinups. And then the final story, which was the one tied into whatever's going on or whatever will be coming next. And it's a bunch of pinups that are basically over dialogue of people some guy talking about what Batman is and does. And
I hate that lettering.
I could have taken or leave this one. If it had ended after the Tom King thing, I would have been fine with that too.
Yeah.
But, I mean, obviously I loved it. So, Batman Detective Comics 1000 by a whole bunch of people. And I guess that's it for 1000 issue series, right? We're never going to reach. And Marvel's trying really hard to get Avengers there.
What about this? This is an Avengers book. This character was in Avengers once. We'll count that. Okay, we're up to 840. All right, people, get on this. Brevoort's in a back room. He started smoking.
So, I obviously love it. I loved it a lot. And, if you're a Batman fan, I'm sure you loved it too. It was made for you. Let's talk about Heroes in Crisis number 7, written by Tom King with art by Clayman, Travis Moore, and Jorge Fornes, who's suddenly all over the place, and it's terrific because he's great.
It's true.
He's really great. He's got
information on something.
Travis Moore is the guy who normally draws Nightwing, and he did a couple of pages, and then Clayman does his couple of pages too. And so what do you think about all this?
I'm honestly don't know what to think, I guess.
And we're issue 7 of 9, so we should be starting to know, you know?
Yeah.
What we think.
I don't hate it. I don't read it and go like, oh, I like it, but I don't know. I don't know if it's not moving fast enough or it's not supposed to, but I am spending a lot of time with characters I don't care about. I do not care about Harley Quinn. No matter how much that's a thing. I liked spending time with Ted Kord and Blue Beetle, and then the other characters. I'm sorry, those are the same person. Booster Gold and Blue Beetle. I think that's really fun. A lot of the Wally stuff is, I don't want it. Yeah. I don't know. There's parts of this book I like a lot, and there's parts I don't. I will never read this again. You know what I mean? Like, I don't mind having the experience of reading it now, mm-hmm. you know, but it doesn't speak to me all that much. Like, I could see the craft in it, but I don't feel connected to it. So I'm not disliking it. I'm not like, I don't want to keep reading this, but I don't feel like I'm in a position to put a judgment on it yet because I don't know what it is, which we've seen before.
I mean, yeah, it's just bizarre. I mean, we're at 80% of the book done, and I still don't know.
I tell you something that I kind of figured out is that the style of art makes this misleading. In that, I think Clayman seems like a very not bad, but sort of a, like, it's superhero artist. It's like, oh, I could see this in Action Comics. This guy could do, you know, this style would be good for Justice League or Avengers or whatever. And this book isn't like that. And so I think that it visually makes you think it's a different kind of book than it is. Like, it feels like, when I'm reading it, it feels like it should look more like, you know, Mitch Garrett's art or you know, just something a little more esoteric and weird, I guess, for lack of a better word. And I think that there's a bit of a cognitive dissonance in there, because it, but also that could be planned. That could be the point. I could see how that would make sense. Like, make them look like superheroic, you know, traditional, you know, Alan Davis, Neil Adams, you know, whatever that kind of style is, you know, but what's going on here is way different than that. And normally they signal that kind of thing, you know, there's symbolism in what kind of art style they choose. And it's not that in this. And I find that really, I don't know if that messes with my take on it. Does that make sense?
It's just, yeah, I understand what you're saying. It's just, it's a very odd story, and I can respect that. And obviously, we've talked about it before. I don't agree with the premise of it, so that's a problem to begin with. But even the execution of, and there's really terrific scenes in here, as always. He's very good at writing characters just sitting in a room and talking.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
but like, I'm looking at the page where Harley Quinn collapses on Booster's chest, kind of. And I'm just not good at being a superhero. Yeah, me neither. And it's just like,
well, she's not a superhero.
They're trying very hard to make her one because she's popular.
I hate that.
I know.
It's it's awful. And it instead of having this really cool niche character who, you know, Paul Dini had sort of like, he closed the book on her a long time ago, by the way, with Mad Love, you know, and she shows up sometimes and it's fun. They're just sucking all of the enjoyment out of her to me. But other people seem to really like it. But to me, it wasn't the character that was created, I guess.
No, this is, you know, what comics do, right? You get a popular villain and suddenly Venom is a good guy, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is that also the character also then becomes a cipher for whatever it is they think will make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not.
Oh, I agree with you.
There's nothing to latch onto. So it's interesting because I think that what people are liking about it is not the character, but the aesthetic of the character. You know, that's what it is. Oh, I like that style. I want to be associated with that style. And then they put into it whatever it is they want because there's no. It is nothing. I don't know.
It's just a strange tone.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like DC's ennui. Everyone's just kind of sad.
So I don't mind that, like, as a thing that, like, it's kind of interesting. If this was the only book I was reading, sure, but it hasn't been pick of the week, you know, like.
Yeah.
But it's experimental. It's thought-provoking and it's interesting. And regardless of what I said about the art before, I don't think it's bad art. I just think it's
the art's great.
It's an interesting choice. And I just make that clear. I'm such a bummer. Can we talk about something I like?
Invaders 3.
Oh, man, this was great. I'm loving this miniseries or whatever the hell it is.
As we enter the Zdarsky's corner. I'm like we said last week, I assume all comics are miniseries until proven otherwise.
Yeah.
I mean, this book is also weird, but in a really fun way.
Yeah.
I go back and forth on the Carlos Magno art.
I agree with
sometimes
that exactly.
I really like it. Sometimes it looks strange.
Mm-hmm.
And I miss the absence of Butch Geiss's flashbacks here, although, you know, I realize you don't want to do those every issue, but still.
Sure.
I wish he was doing the whole book. Yeah. But it's really fun, and you know, these characters are fun together, and also their shared war history makes them interesting.
That's true, and the thing is that over in Avengers, or I guess a lot of books, where Namor is the villain, just outright, like he's bad, and they're all like, I don't know what this is about, let's fight him. Like, this is the book that's dealing with it, because those of us who've, you know, read Namor for a long time, and he's been out of commission for a while, so he may not be as familiar, but, you know, sort of history-wise, are like, well, wait, no, this doesn't make sense. What? And this is the book that's dealing with that.
Yep.
Because, you know, Namor, he's petulant, he's been through stuff, he did flood New York in the past, he's done all that, but he's a good guy, really, at heart, because he's half human, he's whatever, you know, and he fought him in World War II with these guys, he was in love with Sue Storm, so, like, he's a jackass, but his heart's in the right place, and now that's completely changed, which, totally valid, by the way, but I like that this is the book that's dealing with it. I like that we're dealing with a time travel element, you know, to a certain extent, of Captain America and of these guys, you know, from an earlier era. We're dealing with the fact that Jim Hammond, the Human Torch, who is an android, who then, you know, is part of Vision, blah, 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 all that. He's kind of a retired guy writing a book now. I love that. Like, I you know, and I think that exploring their relationship as time goes by has been really fun. And, like, these ties to this old man and old woman, or actually old man and his daughter, you know, what's going on there.
They have a secret.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's all funny. You know, Namor flies away crying. It's great.
He's fighting his friends. And he's also losing his friends. His friend was, you know, the old man in the story is one of their unit members, and he's dying. I do want to mention two things. One, you and I have talked, I don't say privately, but just not on the show, about how we don't love how the modern day Human Torch is drawn, and how he missed, like, the lines.
Yeah,
I really like the way that they had him in this book.
This looks to me like
this is a different Human Torch, but still, it looks kind of better than the way they do Johnny Storm.
But this to me is looks like Marvel Comics number one.
Yeah,
I mean this looks like Golden Age Torch as he was drawn then, but for now. So I think that totally works. It's not the way that Jack Kirby drew the Human Torch, but whatever.
No, but I think when he turns the flame on, I was like, oh, because in Fantastic Four, they just tend to do Johnny as just red.
Yeah, before that, he's pretty much dressed like Jon Favreau. Just in a shirt that's too big.
The other thing I wanted to mention is that, and we've mentioned this in the show, and it's obviously no knock on Stan or tributes to Stan, but these Stan Soapbox pages are really getting on my nerves.
Yeah.
They literally keep happening at the worst possible moment in these stories.
Yes, I agree with you.
I turn the page excitedly, and then it's like it's Stan's soapbox, which is great. Again, I'm not knocking tribute. Just put it in the front, put it in the back.
Yeah.
And I don't know how it is in the paper issues, but it's randomly placed, it seems like, in these digital books, and it seems like always on an important page turn.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you.
Takes you out of the flow. Just put it, make it the front first page of the book. I'm fine with that. Or the last page.
I tell you, Captain America's body, face, anatomy, size, shield position are all over the place in this book, but I can forgive all of it because he really went to town drawing the chainmail on the upper part of the suit.
It's probably what he spends most of his time doing. He goes from very, very giant to normal size to...
Yeah.
He's
roided the fuck out.
Just... I'm going to give them a year on this Hydra Cap thing, and then I'm going to need them to stop mentioning it.
I'm I think that that's fair, but I would like it to be less time.
Sure, I'm not going to do that. So I'm just going to give you the 1 year mourning period, and then we have to stop making this a central feature to all Captain America stories.
I agree.
It looks like since the next issue is all about learning the secrets of Namor's history, we'll probably get some more Butch Geisart because it's all flashbacks.
Yeah, it's a nice looking cover.
Which makes me happy.
That cover looks to me like John Buscema, like Namor.
Have you look at that cover? Well, you know what? Let's talk about it next time. Let's not talk about the next issue. Next.
Okay.
So I was going to go off on a rant about Namor's costume, but let's save that. Let's put a pin in it.
I'm excited.
Chip Zdarsky, part two, Daredevil, number three, just like of Invaders, number three, Marco Cicchetto, who's, I think he might be one of my favorite artists doing comics right now.
I feel like he's a different guy for every book. Not in a bad way. Like I think
really like the way this book looks.
Yeah, I do too. I do too.
I really like it. And this issue was, as we said before, he accidentally killed somebody, which is interesting because he's convinced he was framed here. But we saw the death happen, and it seemed pretty cut and dry that he did it.
Yes, I agree with you there, and it is really one of those kind of interesting like. Who's the good guy? Who's the bad guy? I really loved the scene with the cops. Basically, you know, he squares off one-on-one against big bad cop guy.
The new cop in town from Chicago who hates superheroes.
Who's not wrong. He's correct. Like,
he's not wrong, but also like we're in an entrenched superhero economy in New York. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Nothing you can do about it.
He fights him. He wins. You know, like I was like, oh, that kind of makes sense. I like that all the cops turned on him, though. Although, you know, like, it's a great story moment. But realistically, I was like, that doesn't happen. But it was fun in the story sense. But,
yes. I mean, well, you have to take it realistically in the context of the comic. So yeah. In the context of the comic, he is a hero who has saved their lives and their family's lives. And so they would turn on this guy because he's also kind of an asshole about it.
Yeah, no, that's true. That's fine. Yeah, you're right. You know what? I take it back. But I love the bit. We don't... Go ahead.
No. Continue.
I love the bit where the cop is like, don't perp walk him. Don't take his mask off. Yeah. And like that, to me, was really heartfelt and interesting.
Show
and
some respect.
And I think that we haven't been getting that a lot in comics. We had this thing where Wilson Fisk took over and all of a sudden he set it down and then everybody had to hate Daredevil. And I think this makes a lot more sense than that.
I agree.
Which is, you know, we deal with that in Gotham City, too. I think it's the same thing. But I think it's also establishing in Gotham City the cops don't like him as much, but they, you know, appreciate. Right, but I feel like in general that is more like they resent Batman in Gotham City, it feels like. Or they're crooked and don't want him there anyway. Whereas in this, like the cops who are walking on the, you know, in Hell's Kitchen or whatever, like they appreciate him and they do consider him part of the team. I like that. I think that's good. I don't know if that's been done before. It seems like it might have, but it worked.
So is this a acceptable final page Punisher reveal?
It's a final page Punisher reveal again.
To be fair, they haven't done it in a while.
I can't even, maybe I can't even tell. I did go, Oh, like I was riding on a high for a while and I was like, who's doing? Oh,
I thought of you while reading this because so as Daredevil's being arrested, there's a smoke bomb and the cop gets choked out by somebody, and then Matt wakes up having the bullet taken out of his shoulder because he had been shot, and so it's the Punisher.
He set up those auto machine guns up there. Did he shoot? Did he want to shoot at a bunch of cops? Did he set them up so they didn't shoot the cops specifically? But it seemed like they were gonna.
I think they were aimed at the cars mostly, but yeah. I mean.
I don't know. That seems a little extreme. You know what? It's not. There was a one bit in here, by the way, where he says something about his radar. How it's actually he doesn't. There's no front.
That was super interesting.
It was awesome.
I have no front facing. My radar's 360, so I don't have a front.
Loved it.
And it blew my mind for a second.
Yeah. Anyway, you know what? The last sort of major Daredevil stuff that I think of in the world is probably the Punisher being on the TV show. And so it still feels like they just did it. And I know they didn't. And we just did that other Punisher story, the Marvel Knights one.
Maybe he'll be talking like a cowboy here.
That would be good. I'd take that. Yeah, I mean, I guess it could be interesting, but so far not. It's just...
Yeah, you just don't like the Punisher.
No, not really. I like him, but I don't like him the way that he's constantly used. Like, if there was another way to use him, fine.
Let's return to more Human Torch action, this time with Fantastic Four number 8. And I know what you want to say, so I'm going to let you say it.
What do I want to say? I don't know what I want to say.
But you want to talk about how awesome Dr. Doom's furry coat is.
That was pretty great. He took over the TV and he's like, before I do that, give me my fur wrap with medallion so that I may address them in the style to which I am accustomed. I really liked this, like, a lot.
Which is interesting because I think the last time we talked, you were on the fence about it.
Yeah.
Might have been in the Patreon hangout, but it wasn't the Patreon hangout. You said you were on the fence about this book, but this is a fun issue.
It was a really fun issue. I think the setup was really nice. We talked about this before. I really liked Benevolent Doom following Secret Wars. You know, he'd sort of been cowed and it's like, no, I have to be good in this world. So I'm kind of bummed that he's gone. But also, if the Fantastic Four are going to be back, let's reset that table. I'm totally fine with that. You know, he brings them in. And also, there's now an ambiguity to his morality, basically. So they're like, is he good now? And then he's not. You know, like he says he's doing it, but he's doing it for his ego. He puts the Fantastic Four in all these torture devices, the sort of... You know, I've never been able to fault Dan Slott for his ideas, you know, the torture device that he puts Reed in, where he stretched him completely taut in a room colder than the vacuum of space. And so if he moves, he's going to shatter. And then, you know, the way the heroes all get out of it. I always find Franklin a tough thing to get a handle on.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's actually so omnipotent that it tends to drag.
I mean, the only fault I have with the book is that... I don't really need Franklin and Valeria in it.
Yeah, I mean, much. I don't hate them like the Flash kids or anything. That's interesting.
I don't dislike them, but if you've already got four main characters.
Yeah, but the weight of their power set is such that there's no way that the book isn't about their omnipotent children.
Right.
Like, that's what it would have to be about, and that's kind of not what it was or should be. You know, that being said, I just complained about the last-minute Punisher page turn, you know, when, or I even think sometimes, like, I've had enough Joker showing up in Batman or whatever, but I don't think I've had Doom versus the Fantastic Four in the sort of classic setting in a while, where Doom thinks he's the good guy and he's doing it, but he's super egotistical. He broadcasts his message not only all around the world, but to everybody, you know, all the near planets and things like that. That's really fun. I haven't actually done that in a while, and I think Dan Slott's doing a really good job with it.
And I'm glad they've returned to Ugly Doom.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, that was awesome. That last, the way that they got him, you know, you will pay for this. It's
Sue making his suit invisible for the camera so he's naked in front of the galaxy was pretty funny.
That's pretty great. I think he's a great plotter, and I don't think that I give him enough credit for that historically, but I definitely see it.
It's a good book.
It was fun. It was really fun, mm-hmm. I think. You know, it's a little what I want right now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know what else I want?
What's that?
I want your money. In Tombstone, Michael Biehn says, I want your blood. I don't want that. But let's say, for example, that you really enjoy this show here and you thought, well, at least before this episode, these guys are fun. They talk about comics I like. Now you're wondering, if I go to patreon.com/ifanboy, is there any way that I can earmark that just for Connor, who's not a huge bummer? And
he doesn't hate all the comics he reads.
I've been very positive lately. That is the way over there at patreon.com/ifanboy that you can buy in. You can invest in the ifanboy experience to sort of ensure that you and future generations can continue to receive this.
Whoa, future generations? How long are we doing this?
Well, future generations of, like, one of those animals that doesn't live long. Goldfish, things like that.
Yeah, I got it.
Plants, perennials, things like that. They like to hear us. You should put us out in your garden. Just let us.
Yeah, we'll talk to your plants.
Somebody should do that experiment. Just put us on a loop in a garden and see what happens
to
those
plants.
You killed
my ficus.
Yep. Ficus.
We guarantee we will not kill your ficus.
I can't guarantee that. I do not have the data to back it up. So Patreon is a way that you can do that directly, and that helps us very much. We have stretch goals. The next goal, we made a little progress. The next stretch goal will be we will upload the remaining video shows so that you may have access to our entire archive, which we strove very hard to make sure that it would be evergreen. You'd be able to watch these forever. And so they shouldn't be too out of date, although I'm sure I sound like an idiot a lot more there just differently. I'm a different idiot then.
It's a younger idiot.
Yeah, that's basically it. And then non-comics media podcast brought to you monthly if we reach that next stretch goal. That's going to be a lot of work. So I kind of want to succeed, kind of don't, but also it will be super fun, I think. You can get over to the t-shirt store, t-shirt and merch, devices, not devices, but you have their device covers. There's rugs, there's curtains. Which, if that's the thing you want to do, awesome. Seven Designs are up there. You can go buy that stuff. And finally, if you don't want to deal with any of that, but you're like, I got PayPal. Can I just throw you some change, bro? And I would say, all right, go over to ifanboy.com/support. You can find a PayPal link there. Finally, over at ifanboy.com/Amazon, you will find links to buy the books that we talk about on Books Blowed. We always link to our Pick of the Week book. And you'll find a general link over to amazon.com, our affiliate link there. So that is an innocuous way to help support the show, and you were going to buy that crap anyway.
The latest series from Wonder Comics, which is the Bendis's line of sort of all ages, but just regular comics. Dial H for Hero, number one, written by Sam Humphries, art by Joe Quinones, and I liked it.
Yeah. I liked it. I didn't love it.
I didn't love it, but I liked it. I mean, I've always liked Joe Quinones.
See.
And I really liked – so Dial H for Hero, for people who don't know, is an old DC hero in which a magical phone – anytime it was dialed, gave the person different powers. It's kind of like a patron power phone. And in this one, he dials it, and he becomes Monster Truck. And it's his whole adventure is drawn in very extreme 90s style, and I loved that.
Yeah, that was cool.
Also drawn by Joe Quinones.
Yeah, no, he's got a heck of a lot of range.
It looks like Rob Liefeld, and it's funny.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of things here that were like introducing us, but it wasn't necessarily a ton of plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I felt a little, I think I got to it and I was like, oh, that's it. It wasn't quite.
We don't really know what's happening here. We just sort of meet him. He finds in a very, very dumb teenager move, decides to try to jump a canyon in some rickety handmade ramp, which anyone looking at it would see the angles on it is not going to let him jump.
Yeah,
he's going to go right up in the air and go right down, which is what happens. And he's falling to his death, and the phone appears, and he dials it and becomes Monster Truck. But that's not the most egregious thing. The most egregious thing is his uncle's mayo-based truck, food truck, which just sounds like the worst thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah. I think that this is a really good outlet to do sort of these single issue stories, and really like get you to know a character, and then all this is dressing for getting to know like a character and tell a short story about them. And I think that missed the mark a little on that. But there's time to do more of that.
Yeah, I mean, clearly we're gonna follow Miguel around. He's gonna be the hero.
Is that what the deal is gonna be? Like, it's not an anthology thing?
No, it's not an anthology thing. He's the hero. Right. Next issue, Miguel screws everything up.
All right. Whatever.
Yeah. Wow, you are grumpy this week. Shazam number four. You keep saying you're not, but actions speak louder than words. Shazam number four, Jeff Johns, Dale Eaglesham. I don't know what I wrote in this script. Dale Eaglesham. I like this issue. This is actually really good. This is my favorite issue.
I agree with
you. Series so far, in which things take a dark Logan's Run-esque turn.
I agree. I liked it. And also, Dale Eaglesham. Great. I don't know. There were multiple pages on this where I just thought, wow, this is great. Like, it's perfect. It's like as if, I don't know, it's like Mike Waringo is speaking through him. Like,
well, yeah, because they're the wild lands and all that.
Yeah.
So we spend a lot of time in the land in which the anthropomorphic animals are. Is that not even proper for animals?
Anthropomorphic. Yeah, they're anthropomorphic. Yes,
it's for inanimate objects.
Maybe. No, human-like. They're human-like. So Takitani is, his body is like a human,
It's like Black Sad.
Yes.
And, So we spent a lot of time with animals and suits and things, which was always funny.
Yeah, but, you know, with human face. No, I like, it's not my favorite story, but I really love looking at drawings about it. And I think that he just killed it. And it's like this, there's no shortcuts again, you know, like huge. There's a double page spread when they first, you know, when Talkie Tony first walks outside after a really beautiful sort of sequence of him getting up and getting dressed. Yep. You know, and right away we are shown sort of what the thing is going on in the wildlands with animals, you know, and how they, this is like a Disney movie, you know, like you have to act like you're an animal. If you're not, it's a problem. And they don't like humans. And then you click back to the Funlands and we learn the secret of that is that everybody who grows older than a kid is put down to toil in the basement mines. And that's an amazing double page spread too. And yep. There's creepy little clowns who are, you know, the minions for everything. You know, this was just and then you get the game world, which again, not my favorite, but it was all a delight to look at. It would have been worth it for that. And then at the end, you know, apparently something's wrong with the way that Black Adam's costume used to be, but it's a nice drawing. By the way, in case I wasn't utterly clear about that, there's nothing wrong with the way that Black Adam's costume used to be.
Yeah.
Or the Shazams, for that matter, the Marvels, whoever the hell they are. So if you look past the fact that they have to do these modern updates for no reason, like changing the name of everybody and putting details in the costume that did not need to be there. I really liked it, and I love Black Adam, so I'm excited to have Black Adam stories to go to.
Yeah, this was the best issue so far. I was really impressed with it. Also, I had talked previously about how the Flash has been off, and last issue was weird, but this was actually a really terrific issue. The Flash 67, Josh Williamson, Scott Collins, and this is the first issue of a new story arc about the Trickster, which was set up in the last issue's sort of prelude, you know, of this is the original Trickster, James Jesse. And so previous to this, Barry and Iris were on a world spanning adventure trying to learn about the stupid forces, the Sage Force and the Strong Force and all those dumb things that came out of metal. So he's been gone for a while and he comes back to Central City and everyone is unnaturally happy and cheery. And Scott Collins draws him with these creepy smiles and glassy eyes. And it was like kind of a fun horror story in that no matter where he went to, no matter who he talked to, they were all sort of these Stepford Wives-esque happy people. And so it was good. It was really good. And Scott Collins looked terrific.
Awesome.
We just talked about him recently and he's great still.
So, Bad Luck Chuck number one out from Dark Horse Comics was one of the. It was a weird week for patron picks, and this wasn't the patron pick, but I was like, "Well, I'll give it a shot," because
well, it was up. It was in the running for a while.
Yeah, it was. So, I was a new number one from Dark Horse that the premise did not repulse me.
Why do I know Matthew Dow Smith's name?
He and I were both a bass player at different times in the same band.
Right, but
that's
what
probably not what you mean. He did Doctor Who for a while, at IDW.
That's not it.
Something else. I don't remember what.
I
sort of know him. I know of his work. I like his work. And this is actually he's been more cartoony in the past. This was a little more. Photorealistic's not it, but like more of an Alex Maleev kind of deal. Mm-hmm. Going through here. Did you read this by any chance?
No, but I'm looking at it.
Okay. Do you remember Jed Winnick's character? What's her name? The young black woman who was the detective, Josie Mack.
Josie Mack. Yeah.
And her thing was
she could find what was missing.
She was fine. It's a little like that. Like, but what this everywhere this girl goes, entropy follows. She's a private detective, so things just fall apart when she's near them and go badly. That's why it's Bad Luck Chuck. And there's a whole money scam, parental inheritance thing going on, double crossing, not unlike Stumptown, kinda.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, I thought it was interesting. I liked the art, I liked the plot, I liked the premise. I think the sort of execution was a little pedestrian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the dialogue was there. There wasn't something that made this really stand out. Like, wow, that's brilliant, but pretty strong in general. So it was kind of fun. It was like a little detective story. And I like the power, you know, her thing that stuff just falls apart.
Bad luck.
It. Yeah, I think that's funny. So
disaster on demand is what.
Yeah. I think if this was written with a little more style one way or the other, like I'm thinking like Nick Spencer, you know, like just a little little personality, I think, is really what I'm talking about. Doesn't have to be him, but just something in it. I think it could be super strong. And you know, since it's a pilot, it's a first issue, maybe they'll get to that and find it. I might read the second one of these. I'm not sure.
Black Science 39, recommender Mateo Scalera. We are in the home stretch.
Yeah, this is the end of the penultimate arc, I believe.
I think there's 4 issues left or 5 issues left, something like that. I can't remember the number.
I thought this was a really good, check. You know, like, all right, here's where we are. This is the situation leading into the end. We've sorted out a lot of this stuff that was going on. Let's finish this. Mm-hmm. It's because there's so much going on and so many multiverses and whatever. Like, I know where we are. All the multiverses are gone now, except one. Grant is still less his genius.
He's not dumb, but he's not.
He's not, yeah.
He's not the genius anymore. He's,
you know, we're still working through, like, am I punk enough? you know, like, that's still a thing. We've been through a lot, but do we love each other? Yes, we do love each other. Yes, we love our kids, and our kids love us. Kadir is a bad guy. You leave. Is it mean to make him leave? Maybe, but he's got to go. All right, let's do this. So you're set up for one more double cross. You know, they didn't make the same dumb mistake. Let's finish this out. And I thought it was a good read. It was you know, it set us up for the last bit, which I thought was
what this is definitely a book in which it's basically spelled out in the post issue, the obligatory post issue essay. But
yeah,
that where Rick is working through his time at Marvel, like, you know, like,
yeah,
should I, you know, I was finding success doing a thing I did not want to do, and I wasn't punk enough.
I just saw that the they just released a complete Secret Avengers collection, uh-huh. And the it's a murderous row of artists. But I just thought at that one point, like, Rick's doing a thing that he didn't want to do. Gabe was drawing a thing he didn't want to draw, you know. And it's like the two guys who couldn't just swallow that and let it go.
Nobody was happy.
No, and then you look back, neither of them now are doing superheroes at all. Like, you know, fuck this shit.
So those are the books we want to talk about that we supposedly enjoyed. But if you go to patreon.com/ifanboy, you can vote to add a book to the rundown. Every patron gets a vote. And this week's voting was very odd. The book that ended up winning wasn't even in the running the first day. We went to sleep. We woke up the next morning, looked at the tallies, and I told Josh, and he was like, what? So the book ended up being Batman Beyond number 30, written by Dan Jurgens, art by Doc Shaner.
That was a delightful surprise.
Jordi Belair colors and a Chris Somni cover. So as a way of background, neither Josh nor I are Batman Beyond people.
I watched the first couple, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it. I mean, I've seen a random episode. I watched the Return of the Joker movie. Mm-hmm. But it came out in 2000. I'm sorry, it came out 99 and 2000, and we just graduated college and,
yeah,
you know, working and, you know, door DVRs back then or streaming services, so I never really watched it. So I have no affinity towards Batman Beyond. I know there's some people who are maybe 5 or 10 years younger than us who really love Batman Beyond, but that's not us.
When we started this show, the thing, like a long time ago, the thing that a lot of our early listeners had in common was that they all came up into comics through the X-Men animated show.
Yeah.
And then I think that there was a generation of people who got into it through Batman Beyond is the way that I tend to think about it. I have no market research on that.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely a strong contingent of that Batman Beyond fans. They're always surprised, but we're just about 5 years too old.
Yeah.
So that being said, it takes place in, you know, the cartoon took place in the Paul, not Paul, the Paul Dini, Bruce Timm, you know, Batman world. It was the future in which Bruce Wayne was old and retired, and Terry McGinnis was a young kid who was brought on to be the new Batman. I read the Batman Beyond book, and I don't know if it's this one, because 30 issues is not that many, because it was a couple of years ago, but I remember dropping it like a hot potato when they said that the reason why Dick and Bruce had a falling out was because Bruce impregnated Barbara, mm-hmm, when Dick was going to propose to her. And that's when I dropped it and never looked back. So I did read it. I'm familiar with the world and the characters. Mm-hmm. I'm not unfamiliar. I'm just not a big, you know, not a fan. So this is, I don't know if this is the final issue of the book or just this storyline, but this is the epilogue of The Final Joke, which I guess was a Joker story. And I don't know if Doc Shiner's been drawing the whole thing or not, but I mean, I like this issue. I had a good time reading it. It looked really good.
It looked really good. I think I thought it was a really good looking book. I think Doc Shiner keeps being wasted. And all yeah. Like, he's got Jordy Belair. Like, she's like, it doesn't matter what you do, I'm going to color you. You know, and that's like, she's a vital part of that formula. That was a really good looking book. Very well rendered. That Chris Somney cover, it's not an amazing cover or anything, but I haven't seen Chris Somney in so long. I'm like, that's beautiful. You know,
it was a very kind of a throwbacky cover.
It was, yeah.
I'm happy to see any kind of cover with dialogue in it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, yeah. So it was fun.
Not that there was dialogue in this, but it was like, that's kind of the cover
it
was.
It was fairly, you know, I liked bits of it. I think it was fairly routine from a, you know, it's Dan Jurgens. I don't really care about the subject matter all that much, so maybe it was affected people more. But there, the bit about, I'm actually trying to remember which Robin's who, but basically like his little brother.
I think Robin is the little brother.
Right. Is it Matt?
Yeah.
I liked the bit where he went out there and he froze and then they kicked him out. It basically said, you can't do this anymore. And he's really mad about it. I don't know. I thought that was actually honest. That's almost more honest than any of the other Robin stories.
Well,
you know.
So here, the Joker's dead. He died of a heart attack. And
that drawing of old Joker's great.
Yeah, this issue tarries out cleaning up the last of the Jokers with the Z, who was the Joker-inspired gang from this world, and Dick Grayson's there on some other woman who I don't know who this is. Elena's there. I don't know who she is.
There's a Full Metal Jacket Matthew Modine Joker, apparently.
So,
which is crazy.
Yeah. So while Terry's out cleaning up the last four members of the gang, his brother Matt, who I guess has been they've been trying him as Robin.
A Robin of some sort.
Goes out. They tell him not to. Dick Grayson says, don't go out there. It's too dangerous. And he goes anyway. And then he almost dies a couple of times. And then it ends up Dick shows up and has to save him. And they fire him. And this is too dangerous.
Yeah.
I like the idea of an old man Dick being like, this is dumb.
I did
as
like
much
that.
As I like, love the sidekicks. It's like, you know, it's a good story to tell. This is stupid. No kids should be doing this. So
I think that's what made it work was that it was Dick because he knows.
Yeah.
He knows better than anybody. And the crowbar thing around there, I was like, please stop bringing the crowbar out.
Well, that's what's interesting is because there's a lot of continuity problems. Ultimately, it doesn't matter. But
yeah.
In the cartoon itself, Jason Todd was never a thing. The Joker never murdered a Robin, at least in the cartoon. I think in the movie, something might have happened. I don't remember.
I think of it as symbolism. It's just it's like a.
No, but they talk about it here. He says, I killed a Robin before. I'll do it again.
Oh, okay.
And at some point Dick says that Bruce isn't, you know, between Jason and Barbara, isn't this enough? And, Barbara's not dead. She's the police commissioner, but she was clearly hurt by the joke, you know? So they're kind of melding the cartoon and comic continuities in a way that's kind of muddled.
Mm-hmm.
I remember once in the old book, cause I read it originally because Norm Breyfogle was drawing it. And, there was a dream sequence where Tim and Dick and Jason were all there berating Bruce. And I was like, well, Jason was never in the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't really matter, ultimately. And it ends with Harley Quinn taking the body out of the morgue. I thought it was a solid issue. It looked great. You know, Dan Jurgens can write a comic. We've been fans of his for a while, you know, And if you're into Batman Beyond, you probably really like the issue, I would assume.
Probably.
So ratings.
Ratings.
Instead of four, I don't know, instead of five, I'm going to give it a four.
I'm going to go 3.5.
Sticking with it if there's any more issues.
No.
Okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go vote at a book. This was a good one. I like this one.
I did too.
I had to sort of figure out what was going on. It wasn't a number one from Image. It was like a nice change of pace. Plus, I didn't, you know that Doc Shiner was doing this book, so I don't know how many he's done or what, but
yeah,
it was nice surprise. But also patreon.com/iFanboy, if you give the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower right here on the show. So let's have Josh stick his finger in the phone and dial for H for Hero and give a power.
This first one up here, Michael Hemsley. You remember what we talked about last week when I was about to do one of these? and then how this is much worse than that, even further along, because I'm going to start talking now, and then something's going to come out.
You're not ready.
Oh, I'm in no way prepared.
I see.
You know, one of the things that happened was that I had actually made a real effort to have my books done on time. Really? And I finished them without having to read it right up until we started recording. But in doing so, once I finished them, I was like, I guess I'm done with everything I need to do in the world now. And I didn't do any further thinking.
I see.
What Michael can do is he can always write the exact and perfect blurb under an online classified listing. Because when you're writing on the Facebook marketplace or on eBay or whatever, you're like, well, how much do I put? Do I just copy and paste the product? He knows exactly what to put there. It pours out of him.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives people exactly what they want. It's not too vague. It's not too detailed. It's just what the people need to know to give them the ability to make the right buying decision.
I see.
Also that extends to pricing. Do I make this too high? Do I make this too... No. So he could list your stuff on eBay, and you're going to have a good success rate. He's going to be a fair – he's not gaming the system.
No, but he creates an enticing listing.
Yeah, to get fair market price, attract the right kind of buyer. He's not one of those people who's getting a lot of lowball offers right away because they know not to mess with it.
Right. All right. Doug. Doug.
Thank you.
Doug can turn anything into a bass guitar and play it expertly. So you may be wondering, what does that mean? Well, let's say he picked up this keyboard in front of me right now and started plucking at the keys. It would sound like a perfect bass guitar player. Mm-hmm. You can play anything, but it's only bass.
Uh huh.
He can strum the wheels of a bicycle.
Can he just are we talking about it's electric bass?
Yes.
Does the sound of the bass just sort of go with one kind of bass, like it's a Fender P bass through an Orange amplifier, or does it depend on the situation? You know, is this like, oh, this he sounds more like Bootsy Collins here, or he's Cliff Burton over here?
Well, he is the world's best bass player with any non-bass
guitar
material.
That's a whole other thing. And regardless of genre or style?
Right.
Huh. Wow.
If you recall...
That guy...
Many years ago when we were playing Rock Band...
I do. Dave Allen.
Dave Allen, the bass player. That was my inspiration.
Yep. I love Dave Allen. Dave Allen, we made Dave Allen look like the preternatural bass player. He was the platonic ideal of a bass player.
With the most basic name. Boom. All right, let's move on.
Right. So I had something, and that talking about it completely blew it out of my head. But the fact is that what Donald Dome does is that anything you put on his feet automatically turns into a fuzzy animal-type slipper. He can't wear real shoes. They all turn into big, comically oversized animal slippers. It's not always the same.
But, like, if he's in the snow, do they keep his feet warm?
You know, maybe
like if you put on snow boots and they turn into slippers, do they still insulate like snow boots do?
Maybe not as good, but they're the best kind of slipper that you could wear for that situation.
Mm.
You know, like they're gonna, you know, maybe they go a little higher up the leg. Maybe they have more padding in them. I don't recommend doing, you know, an expedition in them necessarily. But his power isn't gonna, you know, immediately kill him and give him frostbite. I don't think that would work for him. But it's inconvenient at times, you know. He doesn't know what's going to happen. He's about to walk into them, you know, and sometimes, you know, he'll put them on and be like, maybe this time. All right, I'm ready to go to this job interview. Poof, pink bunnies.
That's a curse.
He's struggling to find what the benefit is, although I think we're all sure that there is one. We just haven't figured out how to utilize it yet.
Sure. Verum Libertas.
That's just Latin.
Does not ever need to re-log into any of his streaming services.
Oh my god.
So if Verum's
too many times I've lost track of my Hulu password.
He's like, I really want to watch this thing, and he goes, you know, opens up Showtime anywhere, and it's like it never asks him to re-log in or fucking repair his Apple TV or anything.
Oh.
It just always works.
Go to hbogo.com/activate. Oh, I got to put in my Comcast password again. Awesome. Thanks.
Yep. Always works.
Wow. Wow.
Patreon.com/iFanboys, where you can go at the $5 heart level, get your own superpower. Vote on the patron pick. We had a patron hangout last weekend. There's a lot of things going on over there at patreon.com. So let's knock out an email or two. Mike B says, I found the first volume of The Demon by Garth Ennis in the sale rack at my local comic store, and I'm curious if it's worth picking up. I obviously know you guys are huge fans of Ennis' work, but I've mostly only heard you talk about his runs on Preacher, The Punisher, and several others. What are your thoughts on his Demon run?
I don't think I've read it. There's a lot of Demon in Hitman, and I think that some of the issues actually are part of that.
I haven't read it either, I think it's John McCrae.
I think you're right. I think it's the precursor to Hitman. I think Hitman, Demon leads into Hitman.
It is John McCrae, yes.
I can't do too much Demon in a row.
I cannot either.
I like Demon a lot when he shows up, Etrigan. I like the story. It's fun. But I got about 1 to 2 issues in me before. And I've tried to read miniseries, and I can't do it.
He's a spice.
Yeah.
And you don't want him to be the only thing in the dish.
Yeah,
if
so
I can torture that metaphor a little bit.
So, I mean, I guess what I would say is that, yes, I'm a big Garth Ennis fan. But there's so much good Garth Ennis out there that I haven't necessarily gotten all of it. I don't think I'd seek that
out. And
this
may also be really good, but
we just I've never heard that. It's more like that led to Hitman, which is really good. You know, and Hitman, Demon's a big part of Hitman. Like he's in there a lot, and that works. By the way, he should always talk in couplets. If you're gonna write the Demon, you have to make him talk in couplets. That's how it works. You're not allowed to cheat and go, well, my Demon doesn't talk like that. Because if he is, he's not the Demon. And that's an important role. It's an important thing to remember.
Don't be lazy, writer.
There was no good information for you in there, Mike, unless you were planning to write the Demon and now you know how to do it correctly.
Oh, I would just say it's probably very good.
It's probably very good, but it's probably not Hitman good.
If you like the Demon, it's probably very good.
Okay, that's true.
Andrew F., I've been really enjoying Jeff Johns' run on Shazam so far, and I was looking for more Shazam material to read, and I haven't had a ton of luck as far as collected runs and trade.
Oof.
I was wondering if you had any ideas of what to look for. I have the New 52 Shazam trade, paperback, also the Monster Society of Evil by Jeff Smith. I haven't converted it digitally yet, so any tangible reads would be appreciated.
It's a tough question.
There's not a lot of modern-day...
Yeah.
Shazam, as I say, reluctantly.
Was he in the JSA?
He was in the JSA. Jeff Johns' JSA run. So was really good in that.
Yep. And then the Black Adam was a ton of that, too.
Yeah, he was a very important character in that run, and the whole family was. There was the Judd Winnick book.
With Howard Porter book, for part
Howard
of
Porter
it.
Howard Porter did most of it until he got hurt.
Yep. That was good.
There was the Jerry Ordway Power of Shazam OGN, I think it was, an OGN that came out, maybe the 90s. It was very good.
Didn't love it, but yes. Kingdom Come? That's like Kingdom Come is the biggest Shazam moment in modern comics history, I think.
Yeah. There's not a ton, though. There haven't been a lot of, like, Shazam books. He just hasn't. He's usually, like, in a team book or in, like, a... Or we just basically listed every miniseries I can think of in the last 20 years. So
I think if you like the Jeff Johns Shazam run, you should read the JSA books. Because whether Shazam is the main character you're looking for, you're going to get him. But you're actually more, you're going to get what you like about the Jeff Johns book.
Mm-hmm.
And Dale Eaglesham, because they were on that. And
it feels very much that piece.
That is what you're looking for. I'm positive. The Jeff Smith book, I remember being very excited when it came out. I don't remember a ton about it. I don't think it made a big impact on me other than there's no way that it's not completely beautiful. I haven't seen it in a while. And I don't even know that I was able to appreciate how good Jeff Smith was at the time. But now I am, and I bet it's fantastic looking.
Andrew also says, also no biggie, but I'm really enjoying Peter David's Aquaman. I'm wondering if you had any other Aquaman runs that are worth checking out.
I defer to Connor.
That's the best run. That's the best Aquaman run. So
you're only going downhill from there.
But down. But I mean, I really like the Jeff Johns' New 52 Aquaman run was good in the beginning. I really liked most of the current, not the current run, but the run before this one, which was the cosmic Dan Abnett.
Andy Lanning? No, just Dan Abnett.
It was Dan Abnett. I really liked that run for most of it. It was really good. Not all of it, but most of it. So you really only got those three. I mean, there was other people, but they're not really worth talking about.
I can think of a, like, Justice, what was the Busick year one?
Yeah, but Busick tried to do the book. Then one of the few times I think he had a misfire was when he did Aquaman's solo book. Was that the Arthur of Maine?
Yes, that was not good. No, but I was thinking maybe it's Mark Waid and Barry Kitson.
Mark Waid and Barry Kitson year one.
That's one of my favorite.
JLA year one.
That was one of my favorite Aquaman stories. I thought that was
companion
really fun
to the JLA series we just talked about.
Yeah, I think that was a really there's a fun Aquaman in that story. I think Aquaman in that Grant Morrison, Justice League stuff is actually I really like him there too, which was concurrent with the Peter David stuff, correct?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, it was. So you're already reading the best. but if you like Aquaman, you check out the New 52 version and check out the Dan Abnett.
You've basically liked this run since it started over, or there's been a lot of it that you did like.
Yeah, mostly, and now it's Kelly. Kellyanne.
Oh. Yeah.
And it's not that good.
Kelly
Sue.
Yeah. Wow.
Don't do the show hungover, everyone. this is the log out a little more. Andrew M. Considering that Jonathan Hickman is going to be writing X-Men soon, I'm curious about your thoughts on the state of the X-Men and their future under Hickman. Besides Bendis' run, I think the X-Men have not been given Marvel's top talent for maybe 5+ years. Is Hickman the guy to make the X-Men's Marvel's must-read title? If not, who is? I don't think anyone is.
Yeah, you're probably right. But also, like, that was on purpose. I mean, like that's important to note, is that they backburnered X-Men the same way that they backburnered Fantastic Four.
Because of the movies,
because Fox didn't have the movie rights and they don't. And so that was, you know, that was intentional. So here's the thing. Sorry. It's not about bringing the person along who makes them great again. I just hated saying that, by the way. it's about somebody doing a great run on the right book at the right time. You know what? Like,
yeah. But I agree with that. But also, part of me wonders if their time has passed.
I don't know. I think they're pretty malleable as a concept. I mean, like, if that's the case, then then how come Batman gets to keep having his time over and over again? Like, it's just about...
Yeah, but my point is their time passing because they were marginalized for so long that the fandom sort of went a different way. You know, the Avengers are the... I don't know. I mean, because they were...
But all it's going to take is...
childhoods, they were the most important characters in comics, and then they were... You know, it sort of peaked... Not peaked, but ended with Grant Morrison and Joss Whedon in the early part of 2000s. And then ever since then, the Avengers took off in the movies and became the center. Bendis came on with New Avengers that book became the center of the Marvel Universe. The X-Men were sort of marginalized.
Yeah, but that's happened before. I mean, like, all it's going to take is the right person to come along at the right time and reinvent them, you know, one way or the other. That's what before Morrison came out of the JLA, that was a nothing thing. Before Bendis came on to the Avengers, they were floundering. Like, it's just, you know, these things change and shift.
It's that, but it's also the will of the company. I don't, you know.
That's true. That I will give you.
You're going to want to allow that to happen. Because right now, they're sort of telling the same stories over and over. The, you know, Cyclops's great moral dilemma about what the X-Men being more militant or not. And he's part of, you know, he's taken to... not Charles's dream, but Magneto's dream. I've been reading it pretty regularly since Bendis took the books over. And Bendis at the height of his popularity didn't make them popular either. It just seems like they're telling the same stories over and over with the X-Men. I don't know. They need to really sort of reinvent them from the ground up, I think.
Yeah, but that's tough.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, I'm not that invested in it. But I don't think there's any reason, you know, there's no objective reason that can't be a thing.
Wasn't Stuart Immonen drawing the book?
I mean, was there a book that Stuart Immonen didn't draw?
So if Bendis and Immonen at the height of their popularity couldn't make them a major force in the industry, I don't know that anyone can.
I mean, almost no one has made me interested in it for a long time. I read Astonishing. I read that first run of Astonishing, and I thought it was pretty good.
You read the Bendis book
for a little bit.
Yeah, that was with the young, you know, time traveling X-Men.
Oh yeah, I did like that. That was good. I mean, Jason Aaron's book was really good. That was more than 5 years ago, probably.
There have been good books. They just don't move the needle in the industry for some reason.
Yeah.
Contact at ifanboy.com. That's where you can write in to get the show. Thank you to Mike, Andrew, and Andrew. Let's plug.
You may have noticed us referring to a Booksplode that would have just come out in the last week. That was the one right behind this in the feed. Our Booksplode, which is our talk about a graphic novel collected edition. We did JLA New World Order DC Essential Edition. That's the first 9 and change issues of the 1997 Grant Morrison Howard Porter JLA series that Connor and I love very much, holds a very, very dear part in sort of our comic book history. We went back and read it for the first time in a while and saw if there was still any magic left. Hint, there is. And so you should go check that one out. We'll figure out what the next one's going to be, and there'll be a Talksplode coming into you in April.
So piggybacking on that, all of the extra shows in April are, extra being everything other than this show, there'll be a Shazam movie show next week. Then the week after that, there'll be a Hellboy show. The week after that, there'll be Justice League versus the Fatal Five. The week after that, there'll be the Avengers Endgame show. And then at some point, as Josh mentioned, during that month, we'll have a Talksplode.
You know what? It's pretty busy. Maybe there won't be a talk. No, I have to.
So at some point, there'll be 3 shows in 1 week.
Wow. That's a thing.
So where can you find those shows? iFanboy.com. So we can find all of our podcasts, our old shows, our new shows, our old content, our old articles, everything. You know, there's a lot of stuff there. Old video shows, some of them are there. Head over there. I don't know where I went. I really need some water and aspirin. Find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes up by liking facebook.com/ifanboy and following at ifanboy on Twitter. And also, as we've been mentioning, at ifanboycomics on Instagram is our new social channel. We've been doing the best of the week in panels there, and it's been a lot of fun. So check that out there. And you know, individually, at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, and at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, you could leave a review on iTunes or star rating or something. You could do something
like that.
You don't
like the books.
If you, it's the one guy who listened 1 week, that guy doesn't like anything. There's a bunch of those, but not enough to eclipse a 5-star overall rating over thousands of reviews, but whatever. I'm not bragging. I'm just saying a fact. It's a fact. That's all there is to it. Now you can leave a review for our show. That's a really good way for people to find it or others that you like. Also, it's important for sort of everybody who does a podcast that you enjoy, that you help them push that up there so they can keep doing it. So they have a reason to, better yet, or you can tell folks about it directly, post it on social media, talk to folks, you know, play it for your plants, see how the plants like it. It's difficult to get an opinion from them, but it doesn't mean
I'm curious
have one.
What'll happen. Yeah.
Somebody out there has got to be some sort of scientist. And like, I feel like doing a controlled experiment that's completely pointless. And then you're our man or woman. I don't want
to
be
Ryan
either.
To do it.
Yeah. It's not sloth based.
You play it for a sloth.
See, that's something I want to know about. Could you get a grant for that?
Maybe.
Get Hop to grant. All right, helps spread the iFanboy love. Thanks to everybody who does that. And should we get out of here?
Yeah, let's do that. I desperately need to go lay down. Until next week, I'm Connor.
Farewell and adieu. You fair Spanish lady. This is Sci Fanboy Fig of the Week 7676. 2 jamokes went in the water. 1 jamoke come out. Nerds got the rest. March 29th, 2019. Anyway, we delivered the show.
Oh, God.